never gotta listen. I'm never quitting on my mission. I'ma roll with what I'm giving. Got some ambition, this new addition, filling positions. Looking at the void in myself and feeling what's missing. Better watch the way you're going, better go in the right direction. In the moment you stressing, but you gon' be counting blessings. And I know that for certain, keep on working, open curtains. Haters swerving, cause they ain't ready for your final version. I'm never gon' give up, fall down, I just gotta get up, yeah. Cause this is my road, let's camera action, I'm ready to go.
You're listening to the Tom Ficklin Show on WNHH LP 103.5 FM, your home for community radio.
Good morning. First, I would like to thank Tom Ficklin Show for allowing us to be a part of this program today. And I would like to welcome you all this morning. Today, we're going to discuss a topic that is not necessarily talked about in our community, and that is organ and tissue donation and how you can become a registered donor. So today, we are happy to have join this discussion Carolyn Fletcher, who is a donor mom and volunteer for New England Donor Services and Donate Life America, and also Andrew Jones, who is a multicultural community outreach coordinator with New England Donor Services, and he's also a heart recipient. So first, what I would like to do is tell you a little bit about New England Donor Services, because I always get a question from people, what exactly does your organization do? New England Donor Services coordinates organ and tissue donation in Connecticut, Maine, Massachusetts, New Hampshire, Rhode Island, Vermont, and also Bermuda, which is not a part of New England, but we do Bermuda also. NED serves thousands of donor families each year who have generosity, who have been very generous in making decisions to donate, and we honor their wishes of those who are registered as donors and who would like to give the gift of life. But the main thing is our mission, which is to save and heal lives through organ and tissue donation. Before we start our program, I just want to give you a few stats nationally, and these stats are as of yesterday. So 106,000 persons need a life-saving organ and a transplant. Out of this number, 64,000 persons are actually on the waiting list. As of today, there have been 12,045 persons, deceased and living, who were donors. The total transplants to date are 24,892. And again, these are national numbers. And I just want to give you a little breakdown in New England, especially with people of color. So right now in New England, for Blacks, we have 1,161 persons on the waiting list. And out of those 1,161 persons, 1,051 persons are waiting for kidneys. In the Hispanic community, there are 927 persons waiting, and 759 of those persons are waiting for kidneys. So I think we're going to have a great conversation today, and we want to dispel some myths and misconceptions in regards to organ and tissue donation. And again, Carolyn and AJ, they have compelling stories, and I know we're going to receive a lot of questions. We want to be able to answer those questions. So Carolyn, can you first tell us, what is your connection with donation? And actually, just tell us your story.
Okay, thank you for having me. So again, my name is Carolyn Fletcher, and I am a volunteer for New England Donor Services and a donor mom. So my son, I'm going to show you a picture of him, because I think when you see the face and put the story with the face, it's more impactful. So this is my son. His name is Jarrell Fletcher. He was a sophomore in high school at Notre Dame High School in West Haven. And I volunteered to do this work because if I can touch one person with my story, where I was placed in a situation where I had to make a decision about organ donation in the midst of a tragedy. So it was very compelling to me to do this so that, you know, people will have these conversations with their family. So my son was in his sophomore year of high school. He was a little bit about him. He was an honor student. He played three sports. He played basketball, baseball, and football. He was the kind of kid who always embraced say children who were not liked or looked different or people would bully. Those are kind of people he would always embrace. He was a loving, caring, kind person, had lots of friends. And at the end of his school year, when he was a sophomore, he asked me if he could go to a friend's house for a pizza party. And I never let him ride with anyone because I was afraid of the teenage drivers. So I would take him everywhere, pick him up, take him wherever he needed to go. I, at that point, thought I was the Uber driver when Uber wasn't even in existence. He went nowhere unless mom took him and dropped him off. So I said, well, maybe I should, you know, give it up a little bit and let him go. He wanted to go with one of his friends, and he told me his friend had his license for a long time and everything would be okay. So I reluctantly let him go on the pizza party with the teenage driver, and that ended up being my worst nightmare come true. I received a phone call at like 11:30 at night saying, you need to get to the emergency room. Your son's been in an accident and no details, just get here. So when I arrived at the hospital, I knew I was in trouble as soon as I looked at the nurse's face. And she said to me, are you alone? And I said, yes. And she says, well, you need to call your family. Your son is in a coma. My son had suffered a traumatic brain injury and was not doing well. Off to the side, I could see chaplains, and I was like, oh my God, I'm in real trouble. So the minutes turned into hours, hours turned into days, and these doctors are working feverishly trying to figure out how they can get his swelling in his brain to go down so they could come up with a course of treatment. They were going to try to tap his brain to release some of the pressure and hopefully save him. I watched as his brain activity went up and down and up and down and mostly down. They put him into a medically induced coma because he was responding to my voice and my touch, and they didn't want him to do that. They wanted him to be as still as possible so they could see if they could reduce the swelling in his brain. In the midst of all of this going on, someone from the organ services came to me and asked me if I would consider donation. Well, at that point, I'm still trying to wrap my head around what's happened. So I totally flipped out on the nurse and was like, you need to be going to find somebody to save my son and not ask me about donation. In hindsight, in knowing what really goes on behind the scenes, this nurse was not somebody who was directly involved in my son's care. She worked for the donor services. They do work as a team, but I didn't know that at that time. And she was the person approaching me. So I said, okay, you need to find somebody to take care of him. So as the hours and days went on, they finally came to me and said, there's no more we can do. He is legally declared brain dead, and there's not anything else we can do. That person came back to me again and asked me if I would consider organ donation. And I said, well, let me have a moment with him. This is not something we ever discussed in our household. I'm sure a lot of you out there have not had a discussion about organ donation over your dinner table. And especially not African-American people. That's just not something we do. Our house was all about, how's your grades? Where do you need to go? Where you need to get picked up? So I went back into the room. And when I went into the room, all I could see was his heart beating through his chest. And I said, oh my God, what do I do? I sat down beside him, and it was almost like if I could ask him, what do you want mom to do? He would have said, you need to save somebody and go ahead and do it. He was only on this earth for 16 years, but in his 16 years of life, he touched so many people. There were thousands of people at his funeral and his memorial services combined. And I knew I had to do it. So I donated his heart, his kidneys, his liver, and his pancreas. And from those donations, lives were improved. And one life in particular was saved. So there was a 35-year-old woman who received one of his kidneys. Wasn't able to have children prior to that, and she was able to conceive and have children after she received his kidney. I did get letters from all these people thanking me for the gift of life and for my son being a rainbow in their cloud. I did receive a letter from his other kidney recipient who also received his pancreas. He was in his 50s. The pancreas did not make it because he was a diabetic and there was an infection at the site and that didn't make it. But the most important organ was his heart. And that went to an 11-year-old boy who was having valve replacement surgery. And the valve replacement surgery went really bad. When they tried to jumpstart his heart after his valve replacements, he was bleeding to death. So they placed him on the top of the transplant list. And our tragedies just happened to coincide. He was in Boston's Children's Hospital in Boston, and he was saved as a result of our tragedy. Their family wrote me a letter thanking me so much for the gift of life. The first letter that they sent me, I didn't receive, and they thought I didn't want to connect with them, but they sent me a second letter. This happened in June, and they wrote the letter hoping it would get to me by Christmas. The little boy said, "Mom, I need to speak with that lady because she's lost her son, missed the holidays." I didn't get the letter. They sent the letter again. And when I received the letter again, it was on my son's birthday, which was the following March. So they live in Macon, Georgia, and they were coming back to Boston's Children's Hospital to do a reunion of people who had survived being on the ECMO system, which is the life support system. And of course, we had to make it to Boston to meet them. And I'm sure, you know, some of you may have saw the movies and the stories about donor moms or families being able to put their hand and their chest on their recipient's heart and hear their deceased person's heartbeat. Well, that was me. And that was the most enjoyable day I've ever. It made donation all worthwhile. I knew nothing about it. I didn't know how all of this was going to pan out, but I'm so glad I did. So many people were improved and his heart recipient saved. I met Mark through this whole process, who convinced me to come and tell my story. And that's why I do this work. Jarrell has received so many accolades. He was a honoree in the Rose Bowl Parade in Pasadena, California. Where we went out and they treated our family so well. And it was just like a reunion of donor families and recipients who were so grateful for the gift of life. So it's so important that you have this conversation with your family. I don't ever want anybody to be in the midst of a tragedy and have to make that decision, not knowing what your loved one's wishes are. Talk about it. You know, it's a conversation that needs to be had because this could happen to any one of us at any given time. So it's, you know, it's very, very important to do this. I also go to driving schools because he was in this tragic accident. I go to driving schools and I talk to mothers and children about the importance of safe driving, distracted driving, following road signs, being aware, having people in your car who are distracting you. It's so important. The ramifications of someone being hurt or injured or God forbid, killed in your car are tragic. And these kids who are getting their license now need to know that. And that is my purpose for going there and doing that. But again, if there's one thing I've said to anyone today, I would encourage talking about donation and give someone the gift of life. One of the doctors at Yale said so graciously one day at one of our meetings, he said, God is not looking for organs. He's looking for good souls. So think about that. You know, God forbid you should ever be in this position, but if you are, consider donation.
Thank you, Carolyn. You know, every time we hear your story, it's just so compelling and your passion. We thank you and we thank Jarrell for actually giving the gift of life to so many people. One question I have for you, and we have many other questions also, but we're going to let AJ talk. Has this process helped in your grieving?
Absolutely. when I received that first letter, I was probably in the darkest place ever. I tried not to ever question God and wonder why this happened to me. But when I received that letter from that his heart recipient and those other recipients as well, but it kind of really hit home with the heart recipient and being able to meet him, it really, really helped me in the grief process, because I know, you know, he's still living in someone's body and lives improved and lives saved. So I made that decision, and that really helped me in the grief process, because each day now I know there are people walking around whose lives were improved based on my tragedy.
And it's so, so wonderful that Jarrell has a legacy, and he will always have this legacy because of the gift he gave to others. Before we move on to AJ, a question always comes up, and actually you mentioned it, Carolyn, when you were talking about the different organs that were donated. What's the difference between organ donation and tissue donation? So when you do organ donation, organs are the heart, the lungs, the kidneys, liver, intestines, and the pancreas. And tissue donations are the corneas, tendons, your valves, veins, skin, and bones. And all of these organs, except for two, are after death. You can be a living donor by donating your kidney and part of your liver to someone. And I'm sure we all know persons who are on dialysis, and sometimes they may have a relative donate a kidney or a friend, and the same thing to the liver. So just to answer that question, because a lot of people ask, what's the difference between organ and tissue donation? And we're going to have a lot of other questions answered, but I want AJ to have time to tell his story. AJ, welcome. Glad you're here. As I said before, AJ is also an employee of New England Donor Services, and he does great work in the community, but he's also a heart recipient. So AJ, can you please share your story with us?
Absolutely. Thank you, Mark. And thank you, Harry, for letting us come onto your show. And thank you, Carolyn, for sharing your son's story, Jarrell's story. I've heard the story before several times, but it's always very impactful. It's a great reminder and great inspiration for what I do for work now. And we're really, really lucky to have you on our team.
Thank you.
Story. Yeah, of course. My story begins, I guess it'd be better if I kind of give you an idea of, you know, where I came from. I was born in Ohio. And I moved around a lot with my family. We lived in Florida twice, and we finally made it to Connecticut in 2000. And all throughout my life, I was always very active. I always wanted to be involved in something. And a lot of times that ended up being a sport of some type. So when I was in high school, I was probably at my busiest. I was doing football in the fall, indoor track and field in the winter, and outdoor track in the spring. I sang in the choir. I did musicals in the summer. I was a part of student government. And I really just wanted to be doing something at all times. I wanted to be involved with the people around me. But it wasn't when I got to college, I decided to give a lot of that up, a lot of the extracurricular, so I could focus solely on school and my health. That's when I started getting really, really into lifting weights and just conditioning, and of course following a strict diet plan. And it was helpful being at college if you had a meal plan. So I ended up finding an interest in fitness modeling and bodybuilding, and I did that throughout college. It helped pay for some books, and it was something that I was doing on my own in college. But it wasn't until about spring, my sophomore year, which should be about 2012, I was at home for spring break, and I went out to go on a regular light run down my street and back, nothing crazy. But as soon as I began to pick up pace, I was passing my mailbox, and I just stopped and just felt like as if I had to really work harder to breathe. I even pulled my phone out and checked the air quality that day when I was out there, because I thought that maybe the air was just not as great. But it was something I've never felt before. And I walked back into my house and got on the phone with my doctor right away. And I saw him the next day. And he said that I would have to wear a heart monitor for the next 24 hours. And this heart monitor would just monitor my heart. So the next day, after 24 hours, I came back and he looked at the reading and he said, so you have some irregular heartbeats. And because, you know, protocol, we're just going to, you know, send you to a cardiologist. So I meet with my cardiologist not long after this meeting. And he explains to me at what I had at the time was a viral myocarditis, which is a, simply put, is an infection of the cardiac tissue. And what he went on to explain a lot about the disease. And one of the things that I'll never forget him saying is that it wouldn't be the craziest thing in the world for you to need a heart transplant with this disease. And in my mind, I'm thinking, I'm 22 years old. I do nothing but study and work out and eat healthy. So this is the worst that things are going to get if I've been doing this for so long. And, you know, maybe I had, you know, jinxed myself by saying that or even thinking it, but I was able to continue doing the things that I love to do. I was in the gym the next day, you know, pushing myself, and I was still hitting the books somewhat hard, but I was still studying. And I was able to graduate from the University of New Haven, which is actually right across the street from Jarrell's school, Carolyn. I graduated from the University of New Haven, and I went to, I was just like every other college student, college graduate. You're very eager to get your first full-time job. And it took some time, but I finally found an option at a rental car company. And, you know, it wasn't the most glamorous job. It wasn't the best job out there. But the perk for me was that I got to be around cars all the time. And I'm a car guy. And I was really looking forward to meeting new people and really growing my professional career. And the way they had the program set up is that you would spend 3 days training for this job as a manager trainee. And even during the training, by this time, my disease had really, really accelerated. And I was very tired most of the time. My time in the gym was cut down more than half by this time. And it, going up a flight of stairs would just have me winded. I would always need to take a break after walking for a certain amount of time or going up one flight of stairs. When I had finished the training with my new job, I was supposed to go to my office the next day to start, you know, real work. And on my first day of work, I called out sick. And it was something that I never, ever would expect to do. I really wanted to push myself to at least make it to the first day of work, but I couldn't even get out of bed. I couldn't get dressed. I had my clothes laid out for the next morning. You know, I was really ready to start, you know, a new chapter in my life. And that day, it just wasn't happening. I called out sick and I really never left my room for the next week or so. And within that next week or so, I had ended up gaining some weight. And it wasn't like I gained weight, like fat or anything like that. It was water retention. So what I was in cardiac failure. I was in heart failure at this time. My heart wasn't pumping the blood to where it needed to go. In the first place, where fluids end up, if they don't pass through your heart, it goes through your pulmonary valve, and it gets backed up into your lungs. And that's why I was having shortness of breath all the time. When I had gained that weight, it was actually my mother who, you know, she just didn't want to see me, you know, just sitting around the house all day sleeping. She knew I was very sick, and she called my cardiologist and told her what was going on. Because of that weight gain, my cardiologist basically ordered that I go to the hospital. Like, it was very, very important that I get to the hospital because it wasn't something that we wanted to mess around with. So we just, as much as I didn't want to, and I'm thankful that my mom was there because I probably would have stopped myself from going because I was completely done with all the appointments. I wanted normalcy back in my life. I'm young. This is not the way it should be. But it was what it was. And that was something that I just couldn't really understand at the time because I was just so broken by this that I didn't want anything to get any worse. But it was, unfortunately. I was admitted to Hartford Hospital. And just like all the other times I was admitted for intensive care, or care at all, I would always be at the hospital for a week or two. And that was my assumption going to Hartford Hospital. I would go in here, they take care of me for a little bit, and I'd get a little bit better, and I'd go home. But my first day, within 2 hours of getting there, my cardiologist informed me that I needed a heart transplant. And for that, that was news that I wouldn't say that was really knocked me back, but I'd been so sick for so long and in pain for so long that a heart transplant sounded like a great idea. Before knowing anything about heart transplants, I was taken to the ICU to await my heart transplant. And I was there for the next 4 months. And shortly after getting into the ICU, I was educated about all the different options about what was happening, what I may have to do in the future. And one of those options was I learned about the LVAD, or left ventricular assist device, which is a pump that takes over the functioning of your heart to get the blood to the rest of your body. And this would go on my left ventricle. So it'd be getting the blood to my to the rest of my body. When I was at the end of the 4 months, my condition continued to deteriorate. I was having shortness of breath again when I wasn't having any. And my nurses came back and told me that your condition's deteriorating. We're already maxed out on everything we can do at this point. We'll have to opt for an LVAD. And it was news that I didn't take easily. I had the surgery the same day I got the news that I needed the LVAD. So there was a lot of adjusting that I had to do. But once I woke up with the LVAD, I could tell that there was a difference between how my heart was so weak and now that's being helped by this machine. I was able to return to a lot of things. I was able to go home. I was able to share my story. I'd actually formed a nonprofit while I was in the hospital. So I was actually able to go out in the field and do work with that. And I was living with this LVAD for a year and 1 month. And at the year and 1 month, I got a phone call saying that a heart had been found. It was the middle of the day. I wasn't expecting the call. And I was able to, before they instructed me to come to the hospital for the surgery, I had to make use of my time. And I didn't want to sit thinking about the heart surgery or anything, because I was thinking about not only my surgery, but why I'm having this surgery. And it was because someone else had passed away and I would be receiving their heart. So to keep myself from going crazy, I went and got in one last workout at my gym. And I went to go see my friend who was a nurse, because there was still some time for me until I had to go into the hospital. Once I got that phone call to say that I could go to the hospital, my friend actually drove me to the hospital. My family was in Texas at the time, and they were able to make it up in time right before the surgery. Surgery happened at 3 a.m. on September 21st, 2016. That's only just a couple weeks away right now. So this September 21st will be my 5-year heart anniversary. And, without it, I wouldn't be here. And since having this new heart, I've actually ended up crossing paths with a hospital relations coordinator. Her name is Heather. And I really fell in love with the way that she, with her work, what she was doing for her job. And I knew I wanted to be closer to transplant patients to help them in any way I could. I didn't have any experience in the medical field. I did what I could with what resources I had to go back and become a registered medical assistant at Tunstall Community College. And I was ready to work as a medical assistant and work my way up. And it just so happened that an opportunity at New England Donor Services opened up. And, whatever my qualifications were, I just went for it. And it was the best decision I'd ever made. They hired me, and after some time, I transitioned to community outreach, and this was definitely more my momentum, because I'm able to tell my story, inspire people, especially in schools where teenagers will be learning about getting their driver's licenses, looking forward to making big decisions. They have prom to look forward to, college. I feel like organ donation, when somebody registers as an organ donor, they are aware, they know what the realities are for donor recipients, donor families, anyone who's been affected by organ and tissue transplant, and they're making an amazing decision. They know that if they don't wake up the next day, that they'll be able to help someone else. And that's a superpower that you really can't copy in any other way. So I tell people, if you've ever been a person who's held a door for someone, or really just spared some change or spared some time to listen to someone, you're a person who could be an organ donor, because you're simply giving back. And it's a lot bigger. It's a big decision, and it's a big discussion. And that's why we do things like have radio shows and why we're active on social media. And since getting my heart, I've been able to meet my donor family, my donor parents, at least. And I was able to allow her to listen to my heart. You know, her son says hello. And I check in with him, with her every so often, every holiday. And she's able to see the work that I'm doing. So I know that I'm making a big impact. And it's so great to work alongside with people like Carolyn and Mark. So I really am grateful for where I am today. And I'm so happy to share and dispel some myths today. So, yeah, we can.
Actually, great. AJ, your story is compelling also. And I just want to say it's so great to have both of you here because we have both spectrums. We have the donor mom and we have a recipient. And Carolyn experienced listening to her son's heartbeat. You were able to give that experience and that joy to another mom also so she can see and hear and feel the legacy of her son living on. And you are also doing such great work in the community. And I'm so happy that both of you are working with our young people in regards to organ tissue donation, because it's all about education and starting at an early age. Because Carolyn, you mentioned it. You said, you know, we came to you and you had never really talked about organ and tissue donation. And we have to have these discussions and education in our community so we can, you know, realize that this is something very important and it does affect us as a community. And AJ, I'm going to let you talk because we're going to talk now about all those myths, all those things we hear about in the community. And I'm sure you know what the top ones are and you're going to share those with us now and we'll have some discussion on those.
Sure, absolutely. So let me just pull up right here. So one of the most common myths that we have is that if I arrive to the hospital and I'm severely ill or injured, doctors and hospital staff won't do everything necessary to save my life. And the idea behind this myth is that there is a certain distrust with hospital systems and other communities. But when it comes to organ donation, there's the thought that because I'm an organ donor, they'll be after your organs. They'll try to steal your organs and they won't do what's necessary to save your life. When on the contrary, they are doing everything to save your life. They took an oath and they're working alongside organizations, specifically organ procurement organizations such as New England Donor Services, to make sure that no steps are missed, that the family remains the center of the process and that they're informed about everything. So there's a lot of people involved and they're all working at the same, at giving their maximum effort to save lives. That's what they do. That's all they do.
And that's such a good point, AJ. And I don't know if you want to say something about that, Carolyn, because you mentioned, you know, you have the hospital staff and then you have our organization, but we all collaborate and we work together and we call it a huddle. So we're working with the hospital staff, our professionals who work with everything from the beginning to the end. Also the social workers, the chaplaincy, or any clergy that are involved with the family. So we're all working on this together to do what's right for the person who's donating and also the recipient. And Carolyn, I have a question for you because you go to the schools a lot, the driving schools. What are some of the questions and maybe a myth that AJ just mentioned that you hear from maybe the students and you also share the information with the parents also, correct?
Yes, yes. It's a mandatory class for the parents and the students. They have to go through it in order to get their license. It's interesting because I think some of them are just so shell-shocked after I tell the story that, you know, when I ask if anybody has questions, they get really quiet. But most of their questions are pretty much about, especially the parents, like if my child's only 16 and signs up for organ donation, is that set in stone? Can I override it? Or what's the age it can be overridden? They ask to mostly about the care between the two teams. And I drive it home that I know for a fact that these doctors worked tirelessly, and the nurses, everybody. They were trying to come up with all kinds of solutions and game plans to try to save his life. And as I stated before, I didn't understand the connection because again, this donation was not ever something we talked about. The difference between the New England Donor Services team and the hospital staff. But I know those doctors and nurses never left his side, and they were in touch with me every step of the way. This is what we're going to try. This is what we're going to do. But it was pretty apparent to me when I was watching that monitor of his brain activity that this was not going to have a good outcome. And, you know, in hindsight, when she first came to me and I wasn't receptive of it, I had it in the back of my mind as I was watching that brain activity go up and down, like I said, mostly down. And I had kind of pretty much decided, like, I think this is what I'm going to do, because I pretty much know in my heart that this is not going to work out. But yeah, they're really grateful for the presentation. And again, I think they leave there talking about it. Let's talk about organ donation, which is, you know, the goal for me.
Right. And you know what? You raised a question I want to answer that the parents asked. If my child signs this document, can I override it? So whether it's your teenager or someone of age or whoever registers, that is a legal and binding document, and we consider it the last wishes of the person. So we would hope that the family would honor it. And we do have people that will talk with the family and, you know, let them know that, you know, this is something that your loved one wanted. So when you do, it is a legal document, but we have professionals and staff that really work with the family, talk through it. And also I want to mention, we have what we call an aftercare department. So it's not like once a family makes the decision to donate and give the gift of life that you're just forgotten about. I mean, as long as you need this department, we're there for you and, you know, can help you through your grieving or any materials and things that you need. Now, AJ.
Yeah.
Another myth.
Sure, sure. Oh, and one thing, Carolyn, I wanted to also say, it's really great that you, one thing that I we don't hear a lot is how someone was at first opposed to organ donation, how you recall, you know, lashing out at the nurse for, you know, talking about organ donation. And then, you know, looking back in hindsight, you know, you had a change of, you know, a change of thought. And, you know, that's a sign of hope for anyone who may be opposed. We try to get them to at least the fence and try to get them to see, you know, both sides of the fence. So it's really
right. And in Carolyn, that emotion is a normal emotion.
Yep.
Absolutely. I'm sure all families would have that emotion at that time because it's a very vulnerable time for you.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's important to understand how different people grieve. And speaking of that, it is important to mention that religion is another topic that needs to be covered because organ donation, people may believe that organ donation is against their religion. So the truth is that organ donation is pretty much consistent with the beliefs of just about all the major religions, including Roman Catholics, Islam, branches of Judaism, and pretty much mostly all Protestant faiths. And I tell people, if you're unsure or you're uncomfortable about your decision to become an organ donor versus your religion, at least reach out to your local clergy or a member of your religious faith and get some more information. But I would like to mention that every single year, we look forward to our donor Sabbaths, where we bring together different groups of faith and try to bring the community together to educate about organ and tissue donation through their religion. And so people can understand that it is a wonderful charitable act and an act of compassion towards others.
Great. So we already talked about the myth, if I'm not going to be saved if I'm in an accident. We also talked about religion. What's another one, AJ, that you feel is important?
Another myth, well, I'm kind of combining two myths here. It's, I have a medical condition, so I can't be a donor, and I'm too old to be a donor. So for the first part, with the medical condition, when a patient who has been severely injured or sick is a potential donor, the hospital staff and the organ procurement organization staff will do everything to look that patient up and down. They'll look over their medical history. They will look over their social history. They will talk to the family to get as much information about the patient so they can make all the necessary decisions and come to the best possible outcome. The other part of that myth was I'm too old to be a donor. One of the most amazing facts about organ donation actually is that the oldest organ donor to date was 93 years old, and they usually set the cutoff at 85. So what I'm really trying to say with this myth is that really don't sell yourself short. People with diseases and illnesses have been able to donate organ and tissue despite what their medical history was, despite what their social history is. There are things that will exclude someone from organ donation, such as cancers. But for the most part, we always encourage people to still look past that and not to sell yourself short. I'll never forget meeting a woman in a wheelchair who came to our table and she was already registered as an organ donor, and she just wanted to double check and give her well wishes. And, you know, I'll never forget that moment. Someone who doesn't have the ability to walk still believes that they themselves can offer something to the world.
Yep. And that's so true. You don't want to deprive anyone of wanting to give the gift of life for someone. I always say register because, again, like you said, AJ, doctors and surgeons are going to test the organs and things like that. But if I really want to help someone, I'm going to register, fill out that paper, go online and do what needs to be done. And with that being said, people are asking, well, if I want to register, how can I register? So there's a couple of ways you can register. Number one is you can go online at www.registerme.org. Another way you can register is on your iPhone app under the health app. And then, of course, at the DMV when you go to renew your license. And if you live in Connecticut and it comes time to renew your license, actually, you'll receive a nice flyer with AJ's picture on it encouraging you to register to become a donor.
I'll be watching you.
Yeah, he's looking at you right now. He wants you to register to become an organ donor. Carolyn, so can you tell us some of the different events and things you've done since you've been volunteering with Donate Life and New England Donor Services? And the reason why I say that, because we're going to talk about different things in the community that we could do to spread word about organ and tissue donation and just educate people.
Sure, absolutely. Well, thanks to you. And before COVID hitting, we were out and about a lot. We were doing all kinds of events in the community. We did events at church, at a lot of the different churches. We've spoke about organ donation. We've done radio shows. We've done just outside events. It's been just a litany of things to try to get the word out in the community. After COVID hit, everything is via Zoom and we haven't been out as much. But when I was called and asked about doing the drive-in schools, I did a couple of Zoom calls for the drive-in schools. But there's one particular one in West Haven where they, you know, they did the social distancing. Everybody has masks. And I embraced that opportunity. And I told Mark, I've been going at least 3 times a month. And it's amazing to me that those classes are full with parents and students. And it's just a great opportunity for me to spread the word. If I could also mention just one other thing, Mark, and it's like a little bit of an irony. Donation hit my family in another way. My nephew, who turned 50, just received a kidney. He's approaching a year in October. Oh, and right before we came on today, he had a doctor's appointment. And he texted me and was just so grateful that all of his numbers are just excellent. The doctors are amazed at how well he's doing. His kidney functions are phenomenal. His blood work is phenomenal. Mm-hmm. And he's someone that I advocated for because I thought we could get a living donor for him. And being in this field, doing this volunteer work, I was trying all kinds of ways to get him, get a living donor for him. And that didn't work out. And in October last year, they called and said, "Do you want it? We have it. You're ready." And he had been working out, riding his bike, 20 miles a day, doing every thing he could to kind of keep in shape in preparation for if they would call and say, you know, we have this kidney for you. So it'll be a year in October, thank be to God, and he is doing absolutely fabulous. And I helped him reach out to his donor family. And at first we didn't hear back and he was a little bit discouraged, but 2 months ago they responded back and he's been able to talk to them. They live in New Jersey, but have plans for a reunion.
That is great. We have to hear his story. So I already told you he has to go through our volunteer class because he's going to be speaking at a lot of also because he has a great story also about his journey on getting a kidney. AJ, we're talking about community events, and I know like you've been doing some great things working with New England Donor Services, our team. And what are some of the other things you do in the community that, you know, you share about donation? Because we do a lot of fun things also that bring people together so we can have this
right.
And like kind of like a safe zone type thing. So yeah. AJ, tell some of those events.
Like Carolyn said, it's COVID, but that doesn't stop us. One of the favorite things I like to do is to speak to students in schools. I think that they, mainly because they are the most receptive to being empowered, and they get really excited when they know that there is a decision that they can look forward to among other decisions. I think that's the excitement of them growing up. So it's really great to be able to get in front of a group of students and let them know that they are, you know, they are absolutely worth being where they are, and that they can look within themselves and see that they can offer something to the world. But along with speaking and visiting schools, virtually visiting schools nowadays, we try to collaborate with a lot of community partners. Whether it's through some fraternities that are able to help us spread the word in specific communities, or if it's a car show. We had a small car meet earlier this month, which is actually one of my first events. And it's just another community that we're able to reach and educate about organ donation. And with cars, you know, it goes hand in hand with it being on the driver's license. We also have done different types of creative projects. So we've been doing, since of COVID, we've been doing Instagram Lives and interviewing different people, recipients, donor families. We've spoken to people in politics about how the government affects organ donation. And we really like to work and collaborate and speak with people who are willing to just hear our mission. Because if we're able to get in front of one person or 1,000 people, we can still make a difference. So we really, our work never stops.
Yep. And the reason why I wanted to bring that up, because WNHH is community radio. And what we right. do about the community, and something else I want to bring up, our organization as a work group called Social Equity Work Group. And what this group does within our company is we go out into the community and actually volunteer and do things, because we want the community to also know that we're here for you and we want to do things. So, for instance, during COVID, we've gone to locations to help sites where they're giving out COVID shots.
Right.
We've done food drives. We've done coat drives. So we're in the community wanting to help the community and also educate at the same time. So I say that if you're listening, if you're in any kind of civic organization, fraternal organization, church, wherever, call us. And our information actually will be on Tom Ficklin's website, how you can reach us. And we definitely want to come out and just educate. And right now, we're not really coming out. As you can see, this is virtual. But we've been doing so many virtual events. I tell AJ and Carolyn, I've gotten so savvy with Zoom and everything now. So we will gladly do any type of virtual event, you know, to educate and promote. And actually, we've been doing a lot of things with companies, because a lot of companies been having health and wellness. And during their lunch hour, they've been asking us to do virtual presentations about organ and tissue donation. So believe me, whatever you want us to do, we can make it happen and we can do it.
Absolutely.
Thing I want to bring up right now is if you, Carolyn, could say anything about donation to someone and encourage them to register, what would you say?
I would say, and I think I got this from Kathy, one of the retired nurses with mm-hmm. New England Donor Services, and I think it's a Maya Angelou quote. I think everybody should consider being a rainbow in someone else's cloud. Talk about donation. Discuss it with your family. In hindsight, like I said, it's been a great thing for me to overcome grief. And so many people have come to me either by seeing my story, telling my story, even some of the Zoom events I've done. I saw you, I heard your story, and I decided to be a donor. So be a rainbow in someone else's cloud.
Really well said. AJ, also, what do you want to tell people and leave with people in regards to organ and tissue donation and the importance of being educated, but also the opportunity to give the gift of life to someone else?
Well, I think that if you ever hear about organ donation, if you think about registering, have that discussion with your family and friends first. Because it's different when you are thinking about it yourself, but when you go and have the discussion with your friends and family, it can uncover a lot of other things. It could branch the discussion out into something else, because it is a very deep topic. But I think that it's important that, that when they hear about organ donation, just to whatever you hear out in the media, just take it with a grain of salt. It is a lot of education that needs to happen. But I think that the best advice would be to learn as much as you can about it. And you can do that just by going to, you know, registerme.org. That's where you can register and learn more. You can learn more about the myths and the facts, but definitely learn more about organ donation before making your decision.
That is so true. And what I want to say and again reiterate, the ways that you can register to become an organ and tissue donor. Again, www.registerme.org or on your iPhone under the health app. Follow it. It literally takes 2 minutes. When you do that, actually, you will automatically be put into the national registry. And then, of course, if you go to the Department of Motor Vehicles, you can always register there. And someone asked also that, okay, if I register now and I live in Connecticut, what happens if I move to South Carolina? Well, wherever you move to, it follows you because it goes by the last 4 digits of your Social Security number. So you're in the registry wherever you go throughout the country. So wherever you are, you're always able to help and save someone's life. This has been such a great format. Unfortunately, our time is ending. Again, I want to thank Tom Ficklin for allowing us to have this platform. Our information will be on his website. Please call us at any time. If you're in the Bridgeport area on September 13th, I will actually be at the Department of Motor Vehicles there. And if you want to come out, have any questions or register, you can do that also. So again, I want to thank Carolyn for sharing your story. I want to thank AJ for sharing your story. You both are appreciated so much for the work that you do in the community. And again, thank you, Tom Ficklin, and we wish you a speedy recovery. Everyone have a great holiday weekend.
Everyone, thank you.
With what I'm giving, got some ambition, this new addition, filling positions, looking at the void in myself and feeling what's missing. Better watch the way you're going, better go in the right direction. In the moment, you're stressing, but you're going to be counting blessings. And I know that for certain, keep on working, open curtains, haters swerving, because they ain't ready for your final version. I'm never gonna give up, fall down, I just gotta get up, yeah. Cause this is my road, let's camera action, I'm ready to go. I'm
never gonna give up, fall down, I just gotta get up, yeah. 103.5 FM, New Haven.
Let's camera action, I'm ready to go. Way too long, we faced them storms. Now you gon' face the dawn you waiting for. I said from night to dawn, I write my wrongs alarming. Competition with warnings, ice galore. Now I'm running.